Welcome back, friends, to another episode of the Amber May Show. So glad you're here with us because I have an interesting show for you today. So I have had guests come on and they talked about the patient side of COVID going into the hospitals. Today I have a hospitalist coming in. So it was someone who worked at a hospital, a medical professional who worked in the hospital during COVID, and she had a very interesting perspective and aha moment, awakening. So I want you to hear her story of what happened from a medical professional's point of view. So that's on today's show. Please like, share, and subscribe. Please like, share, and subscribe. Send this far and wide. I'd appreciate it. I always add more content to Telegram, so join me at The Amber May Show on Telegram. I'm on True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, and Cloud Hub, so join me there as well. Please go and check out my website. I have brand new merch. I lower the price, so go and check that out at TheAmberMayShow.com. Click the merch button and grab yourself some swag, a cup, a t-shirt, a hat. Go grab some stuff there. I just put brand new merchandise up there as well. And I would like you to check out the links below in the description, or if you go to theambermayshow.com, hit the promo section. And I have partnered with businesses to help save you money, and I want to highlight one of them, and it's natural skincare, and it's called Beauty by Lorena, and all natural skincare products. So no harsh chemicals, nothing that's going to throw your body off. So check that out. The link is in the description or on the promo section at theambermayshow.com. So I have Hero Soap Company. They're all natural products. They are owned by a veteran, and they donate money to first responders and veterans as well. So check that out. The link is in the description or on the website at theambermayshow.com. Well, without further ado, Rochelle is coming up right now. I am so excited to introduce you to Rochelle Voth. Thank you so much for coming on the program. You work with Dr. Meehan, yes. And I am so excited to get another perspective on medicine today. So thank you for joining us.
I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, I know Dr. Meehan's been on your show multiple times before. He's got a strong voice. He has a pulse on what's going on with modern medicine and the world in general. And so it's been really a privilege and to join his ship and his brigade to kind of bring people wellness going forward. So thank you for having me. So
yeah,
and I've definitely been listening to your shows on the background. So that gives me extra excitement to finally meet you in person too.
Oh, I'm excited because I heard about you. And so, yeah, when the opportunity came to have you on, I had to jump on it. Now, I like your perspective because it's a little different than Dr. Meehan.
Correct.
You come from a hospitalist background.
Right.
And so I'm really curious what it was like for you working in that area, and what was it like, what did you have to deal with as far as your colleagues went? Because, you know, from the patient side, I'm sure you could see and understand how frustrated we were because I've highlighted people who have had loved ones kidnapped during COVID, and then they didn't never make it out of the hospital just because of the way the system was all
so terrible.
It was incentivized to, you know, kill people, not heal them. So I'm just curious, what was that like for you during that time? And have you ever experienced anything like that before?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I originally went to school way back in my undergrad, I knew a few things. I knew that I loved internal medicine. I knew that I loved infectious disease. And I knew that I loved the healing nature of the body. And so then, you know, fast forward about 8 years, I had finished PA school. I'd now gone into medicine. I landed in the hospital world. So for people that don't understand the terminology, a hospitalist is somebody who just, you know, takes care of cancer, heart failure, pneumonia, diabetes, chronic, and then that get into exacerbated conditions that need hospitalist type care. So I put myself in that world. And all of a sudden, you know, about 5 years into my experience of that, hello, pandemic. And, you know, they fit us for these respirator masks. And when I first did that as a youngin, I would say, I go, what am I ever going to use this, you know, 5 years back. I'm like, what's this for? And we always used to laugh about it. We're like, we're never going to use these. And then 5 years later, here we are, and we're being suited and fitted. And, you know, everybody's throwing, you know, anxiety and fear at you. And we're suiting up for this unknown thing. So it was very interesting. At that time, when COVID hit, I was in an LTAC setting, which is a long-term acute care facility. So people who need 25 days or more of inpatient, usually ICU type services. So these are people that are ventilated most often and they need help weaning off of the vent, or these are people that have had strokes, car accidents with severe injuries all over, neurological problems. These are people that are really struggling, or cancer care with end of life type intent. So I was in that capacity and in that form. So I was already well versed a little bit in the pulmonology department because of the ventilation equipment that we were used to, you know, trying to get people off. And then COVID hits. And, you know, nobody knew what it was at first. We all heard rumblings and we didn't quite know what to do with it. And then certain treatment algorithms came out as the head of the infectious disease department was, you know, put at the forefront to tell us what to do and how to treat. And so, you know, to be honest, for the first year and a half, I didn't really know, you know, about things like ivermectin. I didn't really understand the outpatient treatment sector and what was going on in the outpatient world, because my world was the forefront of the medical pandemic to some degree. So I was a little bit, not naive, but just unaware of what was going on in the background.
Well, they were shutting everybody who had a voice down. That's why it was so hard to get the word out.
It was so hard. And, you know, I heard about ivermectin in the background, but I wasn't quite sure. We'd never used it in a hospital capacity before. So I was like, to be honest, I was a little prideful at that time. I said, it's too simple. It won't work. You know, you have to give what's sexy and what's new from pharmacology, because I was a little bit in that world still. That was how I was trained to think. So we go through mid-pandemic and I start realizing, because I started getting then all of the people who had been intubated and sedated from COVID and who had been given either remdesivir or sarilumab, tocilizumab. These are interleukin 6, which is a big fancy word for a chemical molecule that's very inflammatory to your system. They were inhibitors. So what they've tried to do in the hospital was they tried to just put your immune system all the way down and put it basically to flat, you know?
Does that make sense? Like from a medical perspective, well, I mean, if you're fighting a disease, do you want to have a low immune system?
No, you don't.
No.
You don't, no. And so, you know, I wasn't thinking in that sense. I was thinking, just trust the science, just trust the infectious disease doctors who are reading the studies, who are getting the information from the CDC, et cetera. And I started seeing this with the power of observation. I started seeing that those who I was receiving as ventilated patients from COVID-19 had had remdesivir and had had these interleukin 6 inhibitors. And so I said to myself, either COVID is really bad and big and scary and it doesn't respond to medications, or these medications don't work, right? And these medications are causing side effects, excuse me. And so I started looking at the CAT scans of people's lungs that we were looking into. And I started looking at them and I said, you know, you could say that's a lung infection, or you could say that looks a little bit like an autoimmune connective tissue disorder that is actually a side effect and a black box warning from these drugs that we're giving people. And so when I started reading,
like, really came up with that idea.
Yeah, I started looking at that.
Wow.
It looked like when you read a CAT scan, you can tell a little bit in different delineations between what's scar tissue, what's inflammation, what's water, what's actual congestion and debris and infection. So just by the power of observation, I started asking some questions to my own self. And then, interestingly enough, a few of the radiologists who are the people who are reading these CAT scan reports and giving us the data, they started writing it in their report too, because radiologists, what their job is to kind of tell you a differential of what could it be, what am I seeing in there, right? And so they started writing, could be COVID-19 pneumonitis pneumonia, which is what we all expected to read on the CAT scan, or could be autoinflammation, likely from adverse reaction of drug. And they started writing that around the same time that I started observing it. And so I said, something's in the water here. And then I got COVID myself from an ICU patient. And I had what I would think would be the Delta version, because I was out for 3 months myself. I mean, I'm a petite person. I lost 13 pounds. I was this close to being in the ER myself because my oxygen was dropping to the 87s. And I realized through that experience, why I bring that up is because outpatient, I assumed there were medications. I assumed there were things that the primary cares were knowing how to do. And I realized quite quickly, there wasn't. Not only that, but I'm a healthcare provider. I'm a healthy female in my mid-30s, young 30s. Excuse me, I'm not mid-30s yet.
Stay with that as long as you can.
I will.
I'm in my midlife right now. And
midlife is perfect.
I'm going through a crisis.
I love the 30s. I'm not going to lie. They're the greatest. What I realized with my own experience with COVID is that I was restricted from getting treatment. The monoclonal antibodies were the only thing that was out and available really at that time. Fluvoxamine, which is, you know, an SSRI kind of antidepressant treatment, was also kind of available. I called my primary care and they said, you can come into the office when you no longer have a cough. And I said, excuse me, like COVID people have coughs for months. You know, that's ridiculous. Then I went to, you know,
hang on to that real quick, because you're a healthcare provider. You went into healthcare to treat sick people.
Correct.
If you're sick, wouldn't it logically mean that your doctor would see you? Because isn't that what they do and went to school for?
Right.
Like, it made no sense to me because nobody was seeing patients in person. It was it went from like seeing people in person to only telemed. And it was from a patient standpoint, I guess you're a patient too at this point.
Right.
How frustrating was that?
So frustrating. You didn't know who to call. You didn't know what to do. You were left in the cold. And, you know, I realized in that moment, no wonder we have a hospital overflow. And to be very honest, at that time, I started thinking, this is purposeful. This is planned. This is coordinated. Because if you restrict outpatient access, the only place to go is an ER. The urgent care can't even handle it, you know? And then if you don't have ready available drugs and treatment for people and repurpose pharmacological trials, the only thing you have is what's in the hospital. So of course we're overwhelmed. Of course we've been slammed. And to be honest, it really took my own experience to realize that outpatient component of it. And then, like I said, I was restricted from getting the monoclonal antibodies because, literal quote, I was too healthy. I didn't meet any of the risk factors for receiving them, which I can understand in maybe a country where we don't have adequate resources about strategizing who gets what based on risk and assessment, but we're in America. And we have manufacturing companies. The problem was that these antibodies, in retrospect, these monoclonal antibodies worked very well and they prevented hospitalizations.
Dr. Peter McCullough talked about that from the beginning about monoclonal antibodies.
Right. And very effective.
I remember them taking that off the market or something. Man, my mind is foggy about that. But I remember them trying to stop people from using monoclonal antibodies. I'm like, this is so nefarious. You find something that works and you're like, no, I'm not going to let you have it.
And the reason they did that was because not only did it work well, you know, so it prevented hospitalizations, but two things. One, if you have a strategy and an agent that is working, then underneath that emergency use authorization, you can't roll out the vaccines.
That's right.
So this is all planned and this is all step, but they did it and they took back these monoclonal antibodies in the name of it doesn't work for the variants that are in the community.
Right.
Well, it works. You know, it was fluff and stuff, you know? And so I ended up actually getting the monoclonal antibody fusion through the Indian tribal nations because I was not vaccinated and they consider that a risk factor for myself. I'm going to tell you that thing really, truly reversed it in 12 hours for me. I went from feeling like I was going to have to actually crawl into the hospital and where I did not want to go. And within 12 hours, I had my taste and my smell back. My fever went away. My aches were gone. And then it took a 2-month process. I had severe brain fog, fatigue, muscle loss from that. And I was not able to provide healthcare. I was not able to work for a good 2 months. So I empathize with people, not to the degree of being on a ventilator and intubated, but I do empathize with a lot of the sequela that comes after that. So observing in the hospital, things weren't quite right in the treatment pathways, experiencing COVID in the outpatient, you know, sector, that there was no plan, there were no resources, and doctors were afraid, you know?
I just want to say that was a pretty clever thought you had to go to the Native American tribes, because I don't think that would have crossed my mind.
Right. You know, we have a center here in Oklahoma, and they took over an old cancer treatment care facility, and they were just doing out of the goodness of their hearts and then the resources too, because they do have, you know, some government contracts. But they were doing an infusion center where people just all day, every day, every 30 minutes could come in for the monoclonal antibodies. So they were really, really wonderful to work with. They had a plan and they knew what to do. They had infusion nurses that made sure you were well and checked up on you post infusion. It was really handled very, very perfunctorily. Is that the right word? Perfectly.
Okay, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Are you looking for a doctor you can trust? Then look no farther than Dr. Meehan, and you can find him at meehanmd.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com for all your health care, supplemental, and telemed needs. And you know what my family did? We shopped at his supplemental store and we purchased these two items to help support our gut health. These are supporting our gut health because you know what? The gut health is so important. Our immune system is in the gut. Our serotonin's made in the gut. And so the most Americans, if you know, have a leaky gut. So if you're looking to improve your health, whether you're improving your gut health or your immune system, or you just have something that you need to talk to a physician about, go to meehanmd.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com. And while you're there, make sure you use the promo code AMBER so you can save some money. And while you're at the website, make sure you set up your telemed appointment and then check out all his supplements that he offers as well. That's meehanmd.com. Use promo code AMBER at checkout.
All right, America, Patriots, we are currently on the Amber May Show. So stay tuned. Amber May.
What if I told you that there was a beauty product that also helped block fat? Would you be interested? I know you would, because it's something I'm interested in. The older I got, the more wrinkles that are showing up on the forehead, under the eyes. I got this Timeless box. It's amazing because the oil goes on after I clean up my face. The oil goes on and it helps with wrinkles. It helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. It's great for deterring insect bites. You gotta try it. It's amazing at that. And it's super easy. You just put it on your face and it just helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. Not only does the oil do that, but it also blocks fat. So put a dropper in your mouth right before you have a meal and you could be stopping fat right before the get-go. So if you wanna lose weight and you wanna have a beautiful looking face, or if you have skin, anything, a skin that you're just like, I don't like this, then get the Timeless Pack at thetimelesspack.com. Use my name, Amber May. Use promo code Amber May and save almost half off on the Timeless Pack. So that's thetimelesspack.com. Promo code Amber May and save some money for getting your wrinkles and fat loss. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
Wow. So I was very grateful to them. But that was kind of the second, you know, hiccup that I had that made me, and I actually wrote my governor. I wrote my senators, I wrote my state congressman about my experience, because I said, hey, not only am I a healthcare provider and I know how to treat this, you know, not only am I healthy, 33-year-old here in America and should receive treatment, because since when do we restrict treatment from the healthy? You know, you have strep, you get an antibiotic. You have COVID, you should be able to get these antibodies. Mm-hmm. And I wrote back and forth with some political correspondents. And I actually have a few associations with certain political figures that I knew how to get access to more so than, you know, the general public would. And, you know, despite all that, I was still left in the cold. And so that's just crazy to me. And honestly, you know, our government officials, they one responded to me and said, we're aware of what's going on. You know, we're going to try and get the monoclonal antibodies to stay. And then that was it. You know, there was no follow-up from there. And it didn't stay. And then the vaccines rolled out. And they rolled out heavy. And I, because of my experience now and my distrust a little bit of the medical model and the way things were being handled, I said to myself, I have to watch out for this. We have to watch what's going on. And so I started including this messenger RNA shots in my differential diagnosis, which means, you know, my list of all the things that could be wrong in a person when I started looking and evaluating patients. And I started noticing that those who had had shots, and at this time it was really shot one, shot two, by the end of my clinical career in the hospital, there were boosters had rolled out too. I started noticing that things were funky and things were not going right, and that those that had gotten vaccinated with these messenger RNA shots were having some unique syndromes. And those were the people that were now coming in with COVID. And I said, something's wrong. So that's
kind of— Tell me a little bit more about that. The symptoms, the syndromes, mm-hmm. the funkiness. Tell me a little bit about what that looked like.
So what I experienced in the hospital setting were a few different things. One, I saw a lot of cardiac problems coming in. You know, we hear about this sudden cardiac death that happens out mm-hmm. in the outpatient community. I started seeing more heart failure patients come in. I started having people tell me I'm having palpitations. I started seeing people experiencing unexplained dizziness. Typically, when you have a dizziness workup, you get an ultrasound of your heart, you get an EKG, you get a Doppler of your carotid arteries that supply the blood flow to your brain, and everything would be normal. And we couldn't explain it. And they would say, oh, it's just stress. And I'd be like, no, it's not stress if you're standing up and all of a sudden you fall down, you know? Or I would see things like, to be frank, cancer come back out of remission. And those that had it would then pass away within a 3 to 6 month time frame quite quickly. I would come back with an vengeance too. It would be like I had breast cancer and we treated it with a lumpectomy and radiation. And now all of a sudden I have breast cancer again and it's stage four. Like things that just didn't make sense. Like they were revved up. The ante was revved up. I started seeing people that had numbness and tingling of their hands and their feet that wasn't quite explained. You know, the brain fog, things that even honestly, this was the hallmark case to me. And I can speak about it freely because the family's authorized me to. But I had a lady come in. She was in her young 80s and she was acutely psychotic. And psychotic to the point that she could not recognize herself. She could not feed herself, therefore. And she was not able to have mobility of her functional systems. So, you know, you tell somebody on a day-to-day basis, you and I don't need an order to go up and get to go to the bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. She would have to do that. Like, we'd have to remind her, you need to go to the bathroom, you know? So she didn't have a daily functional quality of life because of this psychosis. Wow. So they did an initial workup on her for a month at an outlying facility before I received her as my patient. And at that facility, they worked her up for everything infectious disease orientation, everything blood disorientation or wrong in your blood system. They worked her up for every type of stroke or neurological disorder you could think of. And concurrently, at the same time, she went into renal failure and she was placed on hemodialysis. And they couldn't explain it. They said, we don't know what it is. So what they actually wrote, which is so crazy to me, they said she has Alzheimer's dementia, progressive and rapid onset. To end stage of life in 1 month. And she must have starved herself. So her kidneys failed. And I said, hold on. Just a normal person reading that story would say, I have questions, right? That doesn't make sense. Who's ever heard of somebody having Alzheimer's out of the blue to the point that their kidneys fail and now they have no quality of life? And they actually
I was a dialysis tech when I was in college. Wow. So yeah, none of that makes sense to me as a dialysis tech.
You would absolutely know.
Most of our patients, of course, most of them were seniors by this time when they're on renal failure. And a lot of it had to do with diabetes.
Right. Absolutely.
That was a lot of our patients were diabetic.
Renal failure usually comes from, like you said, a diabetic state or a hypertensive state over time.
Hypertensive, right?
Or some people have weird autoimmune conditions where it just throws little microbombs into your kidneys and it just shatters them and they don't work anymore. You know, but in her case, she was negative for all these tests that you would do. And so I get her as a patient, and part of the benefit of being in the LTAC setting is I get to do now kind of like an audit on her case, right? And so I was looking through her history. I found that she was bit by a squirrel like 2 months before she went kind of, you know, psychotic. So I did a tick panel on her just to see if something was wrong. I continued the workup for about another month, making sure we hadn't missed anything. And then I saw in one of her documents on her admit document when she first went into the hospital that she had had the Pfizer booster 3 days before the onset of all of her symptoms. And this was her second booster. She had had shot one, shot two. A booster and then a fourth booster. So I went in and I asked her family about it. And I said, you know, tell me about this. And they said, we begged her not to do it. She just seems to be progressively off ever since she got this. And yeah, you know, after she got the fourth one, it just kind of, she just went berserk. 3 days after she got it, she landed in the hospital after her fourth, you know, shot. So I said to myself, okay, we got to put this in the differential diagnosis, right? Because this is new. genetic therapy technology. At this point, I was a little bit more aware of what was in the shots, not fully, but, you know, somewhat at least cognizant.
And because I said, this is not a vaccine. This what? Is what do they call these? Gene therapy? Yeah,
gene therapies now. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. I mean, it really truly is, because it's modified instructions given to your body to alter or not to alter, to code for a certain function. You know, and we've shown, just to get off track a little bit, but that in some studies, Dr. Peter McCullough talks about this, it reverses transcriptases into your liver. So it inserts itself into the DNA and working of your liver cells. That's been shown in vivo studies. Well, we haven't obviously biopsied human tissue to prove that, but in the lab, we've shown it. So it codes for a function, right? When you put this messenger RNA in your body, it's like a recipe instruction. So going back to her story, when I realized that, I said, you know, I've been hearing about this pathway of treatment through the frontline critical care doctors. I've been following them now for several months in their work. They had just started releasing some algorithms of treatment for people who had had this, you know, genetic therapy and how to help detox spike protein. And I got an antibody level on her, because we don't have a blood test to this day that shows us how much spike protein is in your blood. There is a lab that's developing right now, and I talk with them frequently and be like, where is it? Can we have it yet? You know, because it would help so many people, I think, understand. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I checked an antibody level on her, and her antibodies were super high, you know, exorbitantly high in terms of her immunity towards COVID exposure. And so I said, you know, by process of elimination, we have done everything else in the book to show that it's not this, it's not that, it's not been that. The only thing I have that's different in her story is this fourth booster where she went psychotic 3 days later and then renal failure a few days after that. I said, will you please let me use ivermectin? I'm going to try it. And I showed them the research. I went before the medical board. I went before the nephrology doctors and the pharmacy team that was involved in her care and infectious disease. And they said, Hail Mary it, she's going to die anyways. That was literally their position. Like,
I was expecting you to say, no, they weren't going to let you because they wanted the ultimate payout of her death. Correct. I thought that's where the story was going.
Well, and usually it does, but this instance. And so we gave her ivermectin. And I'm going to tell you, now at this point, she can't care for herself. So she has a PEG tube in her. We've put that in her. PEG tube, if people don't know, it's, you know, mechanical feeding, way to feed people in your stomach. So gave her ivermectin. Within 12 hours of her first dose, she was able to articulate words that were put together in logical thought. Within 2 days, she was able to recognize herself, her husband, her son, and the caretakers around her. And she was able to process what was happening. Within 3 days, she was able to eat because she was not a risk to herself anymore. And she was able to participate with physical therapy. So this was 2 months after she had had her fourth shot.
For two months,
she didn't know what happened, who she was, what was going on. And we did every medical test under the sun. And then within 3 days of using ivermectin alone, I mean, I didn't even do any natokinase or anything else that we know now today.
Wow.
She had her full mentation back. I would say, if I say full, I would say more like 95, you know, 90, 95%. There were still some irregularities. But that, to me, that was the case that broke the camel's back in that sense. And I said, okay, we need to do something about this because obviously people have been harmed. And so that's kind of my journey and my story and my evolution over the last 3 years while I was in hospital medicine and how I got to where I am today. Now we're joining Dr. Jim Meehan. We've been able to establish a clinic to help people specifically related to either infection or injection of COVID-19 injuries and long-term sequela. So.
Yeah. That is amazing praise to ivermectin, because there's still a lot of doctors out there, mm-hmm. and I've come across them in urgent care when I've had to, because I like using Dr. Meehan and Dr. Stella,
mm-hmm.
but in urgent situations, gone to urgent care, I said, yeah, I use ivermectin. They gave me like
a look.
How dare you? Like,
right.
Yeah. Did you get it? Oh, from Mexico.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Veterinary shop. Yeah.
Yeah. They, mm-hmm. they looked at me all crazy. Like, mm-hmm. and I was just like, I know something you guys don't. Cause I've been all along from the beginning, like the Lord just really and put something in me, ingrained. I don't know exactly. I just know that I knew something was up from the beginning.
Right.
And I can't tell you anything about like why I knew something was up, except I can only attribute it to God. Sure. Why he wanted me to start talking about COVID, warning people, even though I didn't necessarily have concrete evidence, I started finding physicians like Dr. Peter McCullough, who would come on, who became a very good expert in the subject matter, was a physician himself, and other physicians that came along, and then patients with their stories of what happened with COVID and being medically kidnapped. I mean, literally kidnapped from the medical facilities. Now, this is crazy to me because you're seeing these diagnoses from other physicians or other medical providers and they're listing everything, but were they so blinded that they couldn't see? Like, tell me about that side of the story, because it's not computing to me, like how you were able to see through that. But then you're reading these reports and you're like, wow, you totally missed the boat on that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So one of my best friends is an anesthesiologist here in town. And
those are my favorite doctors, by the way.
They have a pretty happy life too. It was, thank God for her, because she likewise is a believer, she and I together. We both think aligned in political events and in medical ways. And so she and I would talk back and forth almost every day, you know, with new information, new research, different angles, questioning points of view. And so because of her, you know, we often say this back to each other that, we weren't trained, and I actually talked to Dr. McCullough about this a little bit too. We weren't trained necessarily to critically think, and I don't mean that to speak ill of my training. It's just that the intensity of the training is very much pushed in a vein that this is the pathology, this is the pill that fixes it, this is what you do. Right? There's an algorithm to it. There's a treatment to it, and in the name of safe and effective or best practice evidence science, which now we know is manipulated and pharmacologically controlled by these companies, financially controlled, with these pharmaceutical companies. That was how we were just trained to do and to practice medicine. And so when you're in that vein and when you're given that model and when you're pushed through that system, you don't think to yourself, well, what about this or what about that? You know, you kind of do. You're an investigative person. We ask a lot of questions when you come in, and you know, I think most people, when you get to a real truth, or when you get a person in front of you, if you ask the right questions, 80% of the time you can get to the right diagnosis without even doing blood work or tests, you know. But she and I, my anesthesiologist friend and I, talk about this a lot. We just don't think the way that the training is going for, you know, PAs, for nurse practitioners, for MDs, DOs, is harvesting a critical thinking crop. And so, you know, to get back, what was your question specifically again? Remind me.
It was about like how they totally miss, you would get all these other diagnoses, but the one, and yet you were able to find the answer.
Yeah. And, you know, I think partially too, we're so busy in the hospital world. I mean, there are so many quality and regulatory controls over you, and even more so now since COVID happened, that you're so busy with the paperwork. You're so busy with, you know, talking to the physical therapist. You're busy talking with the family and the coordinating the care team. There's just so much pressure and responsibility on you that your time is really limited to do the extra research, which is not something that you should say as a provider to some degree as an excuse. But there is that reality to the nature of medicine in a hospital capacity. If you're seeing, I mean, we had 24 patients on the floor, 23, excuse me. And these are potentially ICU patients that are vented and, you know, intubated, et cetera. That requires a lot of time, attention, and care. So I'm working a 12-hour shift at least. And when I get home, you know, I'm trying to decompress and turn off so that I can just cycle my body back into health, because I'm doing that for 7 days on, 7 days off. So on my 7 days off, I should be researching. You know, that is the very true statement of the nature of my job. But I don't think a lot of clinicians do. Mm-mm.
And another physician said that to me too, that they don't think that other physicians are researching. And he thought this something similar, like by the time you're off work, like the last thing you want to think about is work. So
I hate that.
It's that decompress thing. Mm-hmm. And that was his thought. That's probably why his fellow colleagues didn't research.
Yeah.
And that actually, I don't want to berate doctors. I don't. But I guess now we've learned a big lesson that we really do need to be.
Absolutely.
If you're in that position that, you know, because I don't know the human body like you do.
Right.
That research would be important. And it seems to me like, not only do they indoctrinate you with pharmacology, like if you have the symptoms, it's this pill, but isn't it true, or maybe not, but you could correct me, that they also treat like, maybe indoctrinate you that the CDC and the FDA are like the gods. Like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How dare you question them?
Right.
Like, absolutely. Is that true too?
Absolutely. They're the authority. And that's, you know, they're the authority. They're the standard. You know, the physician I worked with, brilliant physician, really, truly, this is his third career. You know, he's doing this because he can, and because he has such a mental capacity for it. But he and I saw two completely different perspectives throughout that COVID crisis. We went through two completely different journeys, because his mentality is, I trust the CDC. My mentality is, I've had enough experiences now that show me something's off. I mean, they were telling you, you know, wear a mask indoors, then don't wear a mask indoors. Oh, now stay inside for 5 days, stay inside for two. You know, it was just all over the place. And you just step back from that. You're like,
went from no mask to one mask, three masks. Yeah. Like, oh my God. They were switching every day. Dr. Fauci had a new thing that, and I'm like, none of it worked.
Yeah. But I think, you know, one, I'll say this about our medical community. We're not trained to read research. That is a thing. Unless you go and you do like a master's in public health, or you take additional courses, the general practitioner is not trained on how to read studies, which is kind of a brilliant technique if you don't want people to know the real answers, you know?
It just goes along exactly with our education system. Yeah. Most high schoolers graduate illiterate, not being able to read. And if you can't read, then you don't know what your Bill of Rights say. You don't know what the government can and cannot do to you.
True.
And they do it by design, because they don't want you to be smarter than them.
Right. And, you know, so I'm going to be honest, most of my waking hours now are in research. It's a complete shift of mind for me and lifestyle. Because not only is this a new frontier of medicine and treating people who have residual like spikeopathy type issues either by infection or injection, you know, it's just new. And so we're needing to constantly read tons of data. But I do it because I want to know that I have made an informed choice, rather than just practice off of a list of an algorithm and a model that I was taught in school. Now, to some degree, you have to have train tracks to move a train. Right. Okay. So I'm very appreciative of what I was taught and how and what I learned, because I need to know those things. But there is a missing element to it. And that inserts your power and your authority as a human being and as an observer and as a clinician, what a clinician really should be, to investigate, to ask questions, and to creatively fix. Right. Not just say one way is the way and this is how you do it, and to follow blatant orders. That's just not the human body either. I mean, the human body does not perform in one way. If it did, we'd all know the answers, right? We're also individually, mechanistically designed. And so you have to acknowledge that, and no one patient is the same. And so it's just it's a new world out there, and I'm excited about it, because it changed my life. It made me a better clinician, I hope. When you really listen to a patient, and when you do the research well surrounding their case, I think you get to a better spot of health quicker, and more with more longevity for them in the long run. So
now let's get to the part where now we're at COVID mandates with vaccines, and every medical professional, you guys went from being the heroes to kind of like, screw that. If you don't get the shot, you're getting fired. I mean, give me a break. You were in the throw of it before the vaccine. And then all of a sudden, God forbid you practice medicine now. So tell me what that was like for you.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, when the vaccine rolled out, it was a requirement of the facility that I was at that you get it or you're fired. I actually, when I went on the portal to sign up for an exemption, there was no other option. It says, I realize, and I'm going to paraphrase, but it said that by submitting this exemption, I am subjecting myself to firing immediately. There was no other, I do not agree with this. So I actually told that to a lawyer, and she advised me to write back a letter and submit a statement saying, I disagree with that statement because there was no other option. I clicked yes, but no, I do not agree with being fired if you fire me for not taking this vaccine. And I had a personal history of bad reactions to the flu vaccine. So I'd had that on file, medical exemptions myself. But when that came around, you know, I of course applied for the mRNA exemption because I said, I don't trust it yet. You know, I don't know anything about this. And I know I personally have a history that's not been good. But the employer that I was working with, I was told from upper chain management, I was even texted and phone called 3 times saying, you are going to be fired. You do realize this, right? And I said, yes, I do. I shouldn't be, but I'm willing to go down because I have autonomy over my body. This is absolutely unethical. And we don't have the data on it at all. I mean, the Pfizer documents weren't even out at that time. The study wasn't released. We just had that 95%. It works, you know? Even that was shady. So.
I know. They kept going backwards. Oh, if you get a COVID vaccine, you won't ever get it and you can't transmit it. Oh, if you get the COVID vaccine, you can still transmit it.
Right.
But they kept changing.
Symptoms are less. Yeah. And now we've shown that it has negative efficacy. If you get it, it has negative. Mm-hmm. The longer you look in, you look into your body to see if you have those antibodies, it shows that it's worse. And then you have worse outcomes if you get COVID later.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second. But right now, I'm going to take a quick break.
When I invented MyPillow, my passion was to help each and every one of you. And 20 years later, all of your support is what keeps us going. Because of you, we've been able to create thousands of USA jobs and help millions get the best sleep ever. To thank you, my employees and I are bringing you a limited edition MyPillow. The Giza Elegance MyPillow is made with my patented adjustable fill, the most amazing cotton, and a 2-inch pipe gusset. It has 4 custom loft levels, machine washable and dryable, and you get my 60-day money-back guarantee and 10-year warranty.
Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your limited edition 20th anniversary MyPillow queen size. Retails for $69.98, now only $19.98. That's right, get a queen size MyPillow for only $19.98.
From all of us here at MyPillow,
thanks, America!
I'm Clay Clark. I'm a very pale male, and you're listening to the Amber May Show. Hey!
Are you getting tired of woke companies trying to destroy our country and strip off us all of our freedoms? Big Mobile is no exception. In fact, we should be calling them Woke Mobile. Did you know that Big Mobile gives tens of millions of dollars each year to organizations that are trying to take away the very freedoms that you and I are working so hard to defend? It's time to do something about it. So here's the good news. Do you have a choice in the matter, and is there an alternative? Well, Patriot Mobile is the America's only Christian conservative wireless provider who shares your values. They offer the very best in nationwide coverage on 4G and 5G LTE networks and an exceptional 100% based customer support. So Patriot Mobile donates a portion of every dollar they earn to conservative organizations that fight for our freedoms. They support organizations like First Liberty, Turning Point USA, Susan B. Anthony List, the NRA, Folds of Honor, Students for Life of America, and many more. And this year, they're going to give more than $1.5 million to conservative causes. And with your help, they aim to double that next year. So the time is now. Our votes are no longer enough. We must stand together and support other like-minded companies and share our beliefs and values. Your cell phone is one way we can stand together against the fight of the left and help make America great again. So Patriot Mobile offers discounts for veterans and first responders, NRA members, and families with multiple lines. So if you want to learn more, go to patriotmobile.com/amber. That's patriotmobile.com/amber and use promo code Amber at checkout. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
So, of course, they won't preach that. But, you know, so when that mandate came out, my job was on the chopping block, and I didn't know for a good, I think, 3 months or so whether or not I was going to be out or in. And the facility that I worked for, they ended up firing about 30% of the staff because they wouldn't take it. And you talk about a crisis of medical care, like just if we're in a pandemic and we need all hands on deck, and then you're going to fire 30% of your staff.
Thank you for saying that, because on my shows, I was just thinking logically about that. Right. You know, I was just thinking logically when the news had come out and I'd share mm-hmm. that. I'm like, how does that make any sense? Doesn't. You need medical professionals during right. a pandemic right. and yet you're firing them. So what does right. that really say? Right. It's not as serious because right. if it really was that serious, they you wouldn't fire a single alive. Soul.
No, 100%. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And so what ended up happening here in the state of Oklahoma, because we had a wonderful attorney general who was kind of on our side at that time, the literally hours before the fire order went in, you know, everybody's eliminated if you didn't take it. He put up a lawsuit against my employer and said, you cannot fire them. It's illegal, basically. So what my employer actually ended up doing was they said, fine, they're not fired, but they can't come to work. So now they can't even collect unemployment. It was just so neurotic and really, truly just mean and evil in a sense.
That happened across the country. People are like, yeah. well, stick their middle finger up to all of you guys. Right. And they're like, well, if you don't want it, mm-hmm. okay, we won't fire you, but you can't get paid.
You can't get paid. Right. And so that unfortunately went into effect. And I, for some reason, was one of, I think, 10 that did not get fired. And the only saving grace I can think of is because I had a formal medical exemption on my history and file. But, you know, we then struggled. We had challenges. You know, we didn't have enough ORs to be able to give people surgeries in the correct amount of time. We didn't have enough nurses per patient to staff things well. And I really think that's when the decline of the hospital system saw huge effects and really started going into a mode and a model where it became very much hierarchical. There's a hierarchy that was barking orders from a financial standpoint and a mm-hmm. business administration rather than a patient care model. And mm-hmm. I really think this is where the switch happened because they started then restricting, just follow down the path about a year later, they started restricting how many labs I could order per patient. They started restricting which antibiotics I could use on certain patients. These are antibiotics I've used for years and I know how to dose just as well as a pharmacist does. And they said, no, sorry, you need to get an infectious disease consultant now in order to prescribe that. And I said, why? And I think it's just revenue cash flow. So it was really, there was really a big transition at that point where the business of medicine took triumph over the patient model care. And, you know, that's not what I signed up to do. It's not why I became a provider. And so I started having ethical dilemmas being in an environment that usurped the patient. Mm-hmm. That's when I started really kind of, and I'm a believer, I started praying to the Lord, what do you want me to do? What do I do here? And so it ultimately just trailed down the block. I ended up stepping out of my position. Actually didn't have a plan. but I did fleece up a prayer and I said, Lord, I would love to help your people that have been injured and that are not being recognized in that hospital system. And I'd love to switch to offense because I've been doing defense medicine. You know, after the damage has been done, how do I rescue you out of it? I said, let me step into the offense position. If you just even give me half a day to help your people and to try and get them well and to keep them outside of the system so that they don't ever have to get there in the first place, I'll do it. Just show me. And then that's when I met Dr. Meehan. And my mom had seen him at a Reawaken America tour. And she gave me his name. And she said, just send them an email. You know, you might be good for you two to connect. So we did. We had a meeting together. And we clicked like that. And I went from, you know, saying to the Lord, I'll give you half a day a week if you can just find me something to do, you know, in this realm, to creating a full-blown clinic around it. And trying to capture those that have been injured knowingly or unknowingly to make them well.
Oh, I'm so glad you connected with Dr. Meehan. I'm glad your mom attended the Reawaken conference. Mm-hmm. There's one coming up. So please go get your tickets at timetofreeamerica.com, timetofreeamerica.com. You can name your own price. And when you're there, well, I think Dr. Meehan won't be at this next one, but there's going to be other physicians mm-hmm. that you can go see. And there's going to be plenty of speakers. Roseanne's going to be there. Alex Jones is going to be there. And before I forget, I wanted to make an announcement of this election summit coming up that Mike Lindell is. I know it's off the subject, but it's important that we get this information out there. Mm-hmm. August 16th and 17th. We've all been waiting for hope and a plan that secures our elections forever. And it's all come down to this. Day one, it's about hope. But day two, the plan gets revealed. It's never been thought of before, never been done in world history, and everyone will embrace the plan no matter what side of the aisle you are on. Save Our Election platform is immediately. The only way it doesn't work is if we don't get a lot of people to come and watch. So please go to lindellevent.com, sign up today, use your referral code Amber, and you can receive a free gift. So lindellevent.com, referral code Amber. So that I want to know, like, what you guys are doing to help treat patients who have had the jab, or like what are you guys up to now? How are you guys helping people in your clinic?
You know, I kind of phrase it in the way of, these are strategies beyond what your primary care physician knows to do, right? Because it really is a new frontier of medicine. We mix this whole thing of spike protein into our bodies and it wreaks this havoc, and we have all these different sequelae from it. So what's exciting about this realm is that there are simple things that we can do that don't break the bank, that restore health to you. And kind of an analogy I use is, you know, if you had COVID or if you had the injection, it's like it put a fire on in your body. It lit everything up. It did real big damage. And now we have to first put out the fire. Then we have to clear out the debris, right? And then we have to build back up the structural support system, which would be your immune system and your health. So some of the things that we're doing is we use repurposed pharmacological drugs like hydroxychloroquine, like ivermectin, like low-dose naltrexone, to help people with inflammation, with spike protein degradation, and to restore a cellular health. Methylene blue is really interesting. That has a preference for neuron tissue, and it turns back on the mitochondria in your body, which are the battery packs in every cell. So that's kind of neat. It helps specifically with brain fog for most people. For ladies who have UTIs, it can help with that too. Actually, very interesting, has a secondary effect. So we do things like that. We use things like nutraceuticals. You've probably heard in the news, if you're following in this sector of, you know, COVID restoration, of wellness, nattokinase, berberine. These are things that are, you know, more of the earth, quercetin, resveratrol, certain forms of magnesium that help, again, restore cellular mechanisms, protect you from inflammation, and kind of calm down what's been damaged to you. And then we also advise and talk about lifestyle modifications like intermittent fasting, red light sauna, ways to promote autophagy, which is, you know, I'm sorry, I blanked on that word for a minute. Did I say it right? To kind of eliminate cellular debris and anything that's been harmful to you. You know, other things that we're doing here, though, in this wheelhouse, what's so neat about being on this cutting edge is that we get to collaborate with a lot of physicians that are being really creative in this space. So if we don't have the strategy here, I know of who to get you to. You know, there's certain physicians in different states that are using, you know, like exosome therapy, kind of stem cell type mechanisms to give people back lung advantages. There's also, we know the people that are trying to develop safe blood registries. There is not yet a blood bank that says it's perfect and, you know, it does not have any vaccine contents or products.
Yes, because the main blood bank here, they said if you have the jab, you can give blood. And people are terrified right now of having a tragic event and not knowing if they're going to be injected with the vaccine that way.
Right. And we don't know that. And so safeblood.us, I work with their marketing media coordinator and some of their developers, and we stay in touch because they're in every state and they're in 30 different countries. And right now that their organization exists as a matched donation or a designated donation of blood. So if you know somebody who's been unvaccinated and they're your blood type, they can designate their blood and give it to you. So they have that set up. Now it is a bit on the merit system because, again, we don't have the test to say, yes, this person has not been vaccinated or has been by blood content. But it's at least something, you know, and it's at least something to try. And now the only hiccup to that too, is if you're in a car accident and you need 4 liters of, you know, units of blood transfusion, you can't just wait for the designated donor, you know? But if you have a surgery and you need to have 2 units on hand in case you have some postoperative blood loss, yeah, you can do that, you know, weeks up before. So there is things like that, people that we're in the wheelhouse with. I work with a pharmacy out in Texas. They compound peptides. Peptides are amino acids put together in different sequences that then code for a function in your body. So the most familiar peptide people are probably aware of is collagen. Collagen is a peptide. It's certain amino acids put together that function for support of, you know, muscle tissue repair, strong, healthy bones, nails, and hair, just hair and nails and skin. Mm-hmm. So we have different types of peptides. One of them is like BPC-157, which helps with tendon repair or gut healing. We have things like Cymax, which helps bring blood flow back to the brain and reduce brain fog, anxiety, and depression. So these are things that just, if you go to your primary care, they're going to say, oh, you know, mm-hmm. what's Cymax? You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in disrespect to them. I just right. say, this is we not the wheelhouse right now.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many patients come to me and they say, I've been to the ENT doctor, the cardiologist, the neurologist, mm-hmm. and my primary care, you know, eight visits, and they spent thousands of dollars and everything's clean, 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 clean. You're fine. It's just stress.
No.
And, you know, by the time they get to me, they're desperate. And yeah. not only that, they're tired and they're a little bit depressed.
Right.
And what's really
Have you guys seen any healing work being done with the reproductive system that's been damaged from the shot?
Yes. Yes, that we do check. You know, our military were vaccinated. Dr. Meehan works with quite a few of those individuals. We see a lot of testosterone depletion post-vaccination from messenger RNA. People who had, you know, 800, 900 levels, which is your upper limit of good range, down to 200. And now they can't run. They used to run 24 miles. Now they can only run 3. So, you know, we do hormone replacement therapy as well to help boost that back into place. And Dr. Meehan has seen some good results and success with that. I work a little bit more on, you know, with the LDN, world low dose naltrexone, and trying to restore people's energy and decrease the inflammation. I had a guy who was, you know, not really able to even get up off the couch and perform work very much on a day-to-day basis. And within about 30 to 45 days, we had him up and bicycling for 30 minutes, 5 times a week. It's crazy. And that was with simple techniques and therapies that did not break the bank. And so, you know, there is hope. And that's the thing I just want people to know, that there is hope. It might not be perfect at first, and we still are learning in this space, but there is hope. I've had people who have lost their sense of taste and smell for 2 years. I actually have two of these individuals right now. 2 years, no taste or bad taste, you know, meat they can't handle. Fruits are mm-hmm. super, super, you know, bitter to them. And within 30 days, we have 60% of their smell back, which is really incredible to them, because now they're just not, they're able to eat more than just Cheez-Its, which is the only thing they're really able to tolerate. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not, again, fully yet back to the fullness of it, but yeah. it's something better.
Yeah.
And so I won't promise, you know, perfection, but I will promise progress. And I think that there is hope. And as we get better in this science and in this wheelhouse, and as more people become literate of these strategies and aware of what the spike protein really has done in our bodies, I just think don't lose hope. Just don't lose hope. There's definitely hope for you.
Well, I want to thank you, Rochelle, so much for coming on. You've yeah. really enlightened us and taught us a lot, gave us another perspective mm-hmm. of what it was like behind the lines of in the hospitals yeah. on a clinical side, clinician yeah. side. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate you.
It was just a joy to be here. And thank you so much for all that you're doing to get the word out, to speak, and to make people aware of the things that, you know, mainstream media is not giving us access to.
In the early 1900s, like 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20. Maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at epswealthmanagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, wealthmanagement.com, epswealthmanagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like them to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program, at epswealthmanagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.